Okay, good morning. We're continuing in Sefer Yeshua, and we're in the booklet, and we left off in the middle of a piece in the booklet, that booklet we gave you long ago, and there's extra copies somewhere around of that. So on the bottom of page Yud Ches, we're talking about the personality of Rachav and how, by hearing from Pinchas that he was a malach, and she saw that a religion that could turn people into angelic figures, something that she should be interested in. And she discussed with them and said, how we see that, I see that Hashem is the God of the heavens above and the world below. So we're two lines from the bottom, on the right hand side, on Yud Ches there. So Isha Hazos, this woman, Esher Shaka Arboim Shana Bebutz Hachet Vabizayin, this woman who for 40 years wallowed in the filth of sin and shame. 40 years she was in this business. Hisiga b'mara eineha u'b'machshavas libo es hasagah gedola. She was able to understand through seeing with her eyes and with the thoughts of her heart a great concept. Next page. Shatora doreshes mikol Yehudi, that which the Torah requests from every Jew. What was she able to understand? And we say, since Sefer Dvarim, and this is one of the most important concepts that Jew has to have, which is V'yadata Hayom V'ashevo Salvecha, should know it today and bring it into your heart. Ki Hashem Hu Elokim B'ashamayim Mimal V'al Aretz Mitoch HaSeinod, that Hashem, He is your God, He is your Lord, from the heavens above to the earth below, there is none other. Ein od milvado. This idea of ein od milvado, she was able to appreciate through this turn of events that happened here. This is everything that Hashem wants from a Jew, and that's what she's understanding on her own. Velozu avsua. Not only that, but even this, which is higa masika maskana ishis gedola. I'm not sure how to read these words. Vekvadus mishkol, whatever. But she's also able to come to a great personal decision, and a weighty one. That what? To change her lifestyle, and to help these people out. Achrei hakarazu mamshicha Torah. And after this recognition, in other words, you go back to Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim says, if you understand that Hashem is the only one, so what's the next pasuk in Sefer Dvarim say? Once you know that Hashem is the only one, so therefore, what are you going to do? V'shamarta eschukav eschusav, esmitzvasav. You're going to keep his mitzvahs. Asher anochi mitzav chayim, which I'm commanding you to do. And she does the same thing. What does she do? The Gemara tells us, v'rachav hazoinim miskayeres, that Rachav, the prostitute, converted to Yiddishkeit. Umekabela salah ol Torah mitzvahs, and accepts upon herself the yoke of Torah mitzvahs. So this one step leads to the other. If you really know there is no other reality but Hashem, so by definition you're going to have to do what Hashem wants. And that's what she was saying. She was saying these exact words, that Hashem is a God above and below. So obviously the next step is she should be converting. And she does. And therefore, v'lo, not only that, ela shebahasog elyona zu, but when you have such a high vision and understanding, u'bekabala amitza v'kashazu, and by making a kabbalah, you accept upon herself this strong and difficult thing to do, she merited a third thing. Hizoich elios ishta shel Yeshua. She merited to be the wife of Yeshua. And we'll see later, the Chazal tells that she marries Yeshua. And more than that, she merited that 8 prophets would be descendants from her. Shem Kohanim Hayotzmen, they became priests who came out from her. L'lamdcha, what does this teach you? Shenitan lahotzi yakar mizolel. One is able to bring forth a precious thing from something that wallows in the lowest of the low. Mebira amikta le'igra rama, from the depths of the lowest pit to the highest tower. Kochosav hanafshia shalom atzumim heim. The spiritual force in a person is awesome. But you have to listen to that which is able to be heard. And to see what's able to be seen. And here's the key word, yodati. You come to the stage of yodati, I know. And that was the critical point. That's what she begins her talk to them in Pasuk Tes. And she goes to them and says, yodati, I know. That's the key word. Yodati. We said so many times, the idea of da'as. Chochma, bina, and da'as. Where da'as means I live in this reality. So when she says yodati, I not only have heard the information, it's not just chochma I have. Chochma means, okay, the Jewish people are powerful. Bina means, okay, we gotta be scared for our lives. And we gotta prepare to defend ourselves or give up or something. But then the da'as says, why fight such a people? Why run away from such a people? You should want to join such a people. That's what das. You have to have das for that. If you realize that Hashem is the entire reality, so why would one want to run away from that which is the entire reality? So that is a unique thing, as we will see. We'll look in other svarim how that is why she is grouped together with Yisro. In many midrashim, she and Yisro are coupled together. Because they both had checkered pasts, but were at least capable of seeing the truth when the truth came to them. So this gives us a very good insight into who this Rachav is, and therefore, you know, no one should give up hope, no matter how low a person is. And as you remember, the whole theme that we're going to go over and over and over is the idea of conquest of the land. Conquest of the land isn't just conquest of a geographical portion in the Mediterranean area, but it's the conquest of your own neshama, the conquest of your own Yetzer Hara, being able to control that and maintain power in the region called yourself. And so many messages come through here, and we see that there are those who may be very, very far away. The last person you think who could conquer anything was Rachav. Okay, Yeshua I could hear. So people would look, okay, if I be a tzaddik Yeshua, I could conquer the land. If I was an FFB, like all the other Jewish people who were together with Yeshua, I could conquer the land. But how can I conquer the land if I'm so far away and I've done so many averes and the Yetzer Hara has conquered me for 40 years? The answer is you just have to be honest with yourself. You just have to have das. If you have das, you can change your life totally. And not only did she change her life totally, she figured, okay, she changed her life totally, so she'll be one of the cast of thousands who came along for the conquest. She wasn't. She married Yeshua. That's how far it goes. That's how far it goes. She married Yeshua, and 8 prophets descend from her, something that most of the rank and file of Jewish people for the whole 40 years couldn't accomplish. So what the logistics of that is, we'll still leave for another Sefer to explain to us. And we'll get into that a little more, later on. But clearly you see that there's a lot on the table over here. So now, to keep with this theme of Rachav for a while, there's a very important Yalkut Shimoni, that takes us a step further. And, so the Yalkut Shimoni, this Sefer is already basing a little bit on the Yalkut Shimoni. Yalkut Shimoni is a midrash. And when she, on the pasuk that says, you know, of her little speech over here, so it says, what was her reward? So it says, the reward is that came from her 8 Navim and Kohanim. And these are the ones that came from her. Some, a couple you've heard of, many you haven't heard of. Well, one you definitely heard of is Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Jeremiah the prophet is a descendant from her. Then Chilkiah, Sirah, Maaseah, Baruch ben Nuriah, Chanomel, and Sholem. Different people, maybe less well known. And Yehuda adds, even Chulda Hanaviyah. Chulda, the famous female prophet, came from her. So now, a lot of big yichus. You don't get such descendants come from you unless you are somebody important. Now the Yalkut Shimoni concludes and says, and this is an a fortiori argument, a kal v'chomer. And look what we could say from somebody that came from a nation. Rachel came from a nation. That what did God say we should do to these people? Lo sechaya kol neshama. Don't let anybody live. The Canaanites supposed to get all wiped out. She came from Bilhah, supposed to get wiped out. But because she brought herself close, so Hashem brought her close. Can you imagine a Jew who keeps the Torah and tries to get closer to Hashem? All the more so, what's going to happen to such a Jew? Right? So you see how much we are capable of rising if we decide to come close to Hashem. So the Musar HaNeviim, the Sefer on this Yalkut Shemoni, he asks, so why does she merit Davka, Neviim and Kohanim? Vosepes Neviim, you know, there's a lot of things you can merit. So why Neviim and Kohanim? So he explains that what is the purpose of Neviim and Kohanim? What's their main function? What's the main function of a Kohen? What's the main function of a Navi? Is to teach Torah. It's the main function of a Kohen. Working in the Beis HaMikdash, they only work twice, 2 weeks out of the year. And even then, how much do they work in each week? So they don't do a lot of work in the Beis HaMikdash. Their main function is to teach Torah, talk to the Jews, and get them to do tshuva. Now, obviously, when the Kohen gets up, and a Navi gets up, and starts telling the Jewish people they should do tshuva, the Satan, the adversary, the Yetzer Hara, he has to work very hard against what the overtures of the Kohen and the Navi is all about. So what are the kind of things he puts in the minds of the listeners? And say, listen, you know, I'm so far gone, I can't change. Right? It's not possible to change. Right? And that's why, for example, when we daven in the Marv prayer, we say, V'haser Satan milfaneinu macharenu. You should take away the Satan, the adversary, away from in front of us and behind us. So what's the idea in front of us and behind us? So he explains like this, very nicely. He says, the Satan was with us before us, before we do an Avera, and he's with us after we do an Avera. How does that work? So before we do a mitzvah, right, he tries to say what? Why do this mitzvah? It's such a little thing. It's not so important. Why bother to do this? It's only davening in the morning, big deal. You know, davening a minyan is not such a big mitzvah. You don't have to go. You don't have to, even every day you don't have to. You know, Hashem knows what's in your heart. You don't have to be in a formal prayer service. You love God and you know you love God. You don't have to go through this, you know, just go through robotic motions like all the other people are doing in the synagogue, saying words that are meaningless to them. So he makes the prayer such a small thing. So before, the Satan before you makes the mitzvah so small that you don't do it. Yeah. But then after many years pass and you haven't done it, and the person begins to regret the fact that he hasn't gone to shul or whatever he does, then the Satan turns it totally around and he says, do you think you can do tshuva for such a big avera? You never talked to God for so many years? You think you can now start talking to God? Right? That's how it works. And he makes it a big deal. There's no way tshuva can help for you. And now that you've lost your portion of the world to come, because you're obviously a bum, right? So at least you might as well enjoy this world and have all the fun you can. And that was the whole argument of Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya, Rebbe Meir says, please, Rebbe, come back to Yiddishkeit. He says, I already have caused others to sin. You caused others to sin. You're not a ben Olam Haba. So I don't have the world to come. I might as well enjoy this world. So these are all the seductions of the Yetzirah. So he says, Hashem, please remove the Satan from in front of us. That before the sin, we shouldn't listen to the Satan. We should understand that if we transgress, it's a big Avera. And behind us, that after we sin, that if he's going to make it seem like a big Avera, that we can't do tshuva, don't listen. No matter what the Avera is, you can do tshuva. And that's what the Navi, and that's what the Kohen is all about. Exhorting us to do tshuva, notwithstanding our path. So now it makes a lot of sense why they descend from Rachav, obviously. These prophets and these Kohanim who came from Rachav, right? She's a symbol for the Jewish people. How far a person can do tshuva, right? She was a Canaanite. And the Canaanites were supposed to wipe out. And she was not just a Canaanite, but she was the lowest of the Canaanites. She was a professional prostitute, right? And even for that, you don't get lower than that. Being a Canaanite who is a cursed people, Noah cursed the Canaanites. So you're cursed, number one. You're in a society that's terrible. And you're the lowest of all of the Canaanites. Doesn't get much lower than that. Right? And she was able to what? Convert to Yiddishkeit and have descendants who are Kohanim and Levim. So that's the whole point. That's the whole point of the Yalkut, you see. The Yalkut is saying two points that seem to be disjointed. First it's saying that eight Kohanim and Levim come from her, and then it says the a fortiori argument, and if somebody like this happened to them, what should happen with the, what should the Jews be doing? That is goof of the argument that the priests would tell the Jews. That's what the Yalkut seems to be putting two seemingly unrelated points together. The fact she has descendants that are great. And then it just happens to make a statement. Oh, and, you know, if you see that Rachav is able to come close to God, any Jew should come close to God. So what does one thing have to do with the other? I mean, it's nice, but now it's much more. It's specifically, this is why Kohanim and Levim came from her. Because this would be their argument. They would be more adept at having their words being listened to. You know, a guy comes up, he's 20 generations, Yerushalmi, tells you to do tshuva, he said, you ready to dismiss him, and it's easy for you to say. You've been living your shalim all your life, all you know is this. But this Yirmiyo gets up and says, what are you telling me to do tshuva? My great-great-grandmother was the lowest of the low. And look what kind of nachas, look what came out of her. You're going to tell me you can't do tshuva? Very powerful argument. So that's a beautiful explanation there. Right? And also he explains another concept, that a Navi and a Kohen, another requirement, not only to have the ability to get people to do tshuva, but also a Kohen and a Navi has to have the ability to be Moser Nefesh for Hashem, to self-sacrifice for Hashem. Right? And they have to be able to, for example, the prophet has to give the words of rebuke even to somebody who's very powerful and strong and does not want to hear the message. These Navim, these prophets had to go to the kings. The kings were all powerful, and one word they could have off with his head. And indeed, we found sometimes Nevi'im would get killed. Right? Can you imagine you're going to the most powerful Russia on the planet, who's a king, whatever he says can go, and you have to get up to him and say, you're a bum. Hashem says you're going to die in battle, and this is going to happen. That takes a lot of courage. And you have to be willing to give your life up. Right? And you can never be a prophet if you don't have what is mesiras nefesh. Besides, you have to be willing to forego on all the mundane pleasures of this world and put yourself in secluded areas to get close to Hashem. You have to give a lot up to become a Navi and put a lot of yourself at risk. So now, where is that going to come from? It's going to come from somebody like Rachav, who Rachav sincerely was moser nefesh, risked her life to save these spies. Because had anybody realized what was going on, had they caught her, had they known she was aiding and abetting these criminals, they would have put her to death surely. So therefore, because she had this midah, she would have children, great-great-grandchildren, who would have the same midah and be able to bring the Jewish people back closer to Hashem. So it's a tremendously inspiring incident that, you know, the Torah really, the Navi doesn't have to really tell us all this. Like, why are the details? But now you begin to see why these details are so critical. To realize that not only the Yehoshuas and the followers of Yehoshua are the ones who can conquer their own territory, but even the Rachavs can conquer their own territory. So that's a very important point he adds. Okay, let's now continue in the text and keep the booklet open. We're going to keep referring back to the book. There's still a couple more pieces to look in the booklet. But now let's venture forth. Into the Navi continues. So she's done her speech, part of her speech at least. So we continue. We're now on Pasuk Yud Beis, Pasuk 12. So now she says, she asks for something. Okay, Yud Beis. Va'ata, and now. And we'll have to see what the emphasis is on the Va'ata, and now. Hishavu na li b'Hashem. Swear to me by God. Ki asisi imochem chased. Because I have done for you a kindness. Vasisem gamatem im beis avi chased. And you should do also with my father's household a kindness. Unesatem li ois emes. And you should give me a truthful sign. Yud Gimel. V'chayisem es ovi ves imi ves achai ves achosai ves kol ha-shelahem. And you should keep alive my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that is to them. In other, you know, the Jews are supposed to wipe out all the Canaanites. And they're gonna, and she knows they're gonna come to Yericho. She knows they're gonna kill everybody in Yericho. So she's asking them to keep her family alive. So that is her request. That's their request. So let's see. So what's their answer? Vayom rala anashim. So the men answer, Nafshenu sachteichem lamus im lo sagidu es devoreinu ze. So what do they answer? Nafshenu really should be what? They're going to be agreeable to what she says, right? And if we would want to hurt them, you know, we will give ourselves over to death. In other words, it's an interesting expression. Nafshenu tachtechem lamus. Our souls are under them to die. What does it mean to say? They're agreeing. They say yes. You know, and their protection is something that our lives are dependent upon. In other words, we're agreeable to such an extent that if we don't protect them, we should die. That's what they mean. Nafshenu tachtenu lamus. Our souls are, well, that's certainly promising here. Our souls are under them or in their stead to die. What do they mean? Imlos. But, however, in other words, we're agreeable and we're willing to die if we don't keep this promise. It's fine. But there's a little catch over here. Imlo sagidu es divareinu ze, provided you don't tell over our words. What's the point over here? You know, they're saying like this, how are we going to know who your family is? How are we going to know who your family is? You know, what if you start spreading the word and everybody starts finding out we made this little agreement with you? So all of a sudden she has a mishpacha of 50,000 people. You know? It's not going to work. So he's saying, you know, you can't let word of this out to other people, right? You got to be careful. These words, you got to be very careful, and you'll see what it's coming up over here, and you'll see. And when Hashem will give us the land, and we will do with you a kindness and a truth. And we will see shortly that there is a sign that is going on over here. There will be a sign to show what it is. And the sign is she will hang a red rope from her window, lower them down. And that red rope is the sign that they'll tell all the soldiers, see this one house with a red rope? That red rope house, that we leave. That we leave. So now, you go bring your family and go into the place where the red rope is. But if you're gonna tell 50,000 people that there's a red rope and everyone's gonna start putting red ropes around, right? Then we're obviously, you're abusing this and therefore there's, the promise is off. So that's kind of the condition that they make with her. So let's take a look now back into the booklet and see how he works on this little piece over here. So it's they're agreeable, and even to her, a little bit of, you could tell she's already going to be Jewish. Why? Because it's chutzpah that she has to say, well, not just me, but my family too. That must have clinched it to realize that she's going to convert, to have the chutzpah to say, you know, she'd save. But again, obviously, if she was able to do that, that means her mishpacha had similar qualities, had some kind of qualities to be able to pull this off as well. So let's see how he explains, the author, explains this next little piece over here. So we're on page Yutes, on the words Chesed ve'emes. So the bold lines is what she says, do this kindness for me. So they keep using the word Chesed and Emes. Kindness and truth. So what's the difference in kindness and truth? What's the emphasis here? So the Radak explains the following. Chesed, what is Chesed? Hi hatova shegomel ha'odam l'chaver l'lo hischaivus kudemes. A kindness is when you do something good to somebody without having owed it to the person beforehand. In other words, you on your own decide to do something nice, and you didn't owe him a favor, that it's a payback. It was, you initiate the kindness, and there was nothing prior to that kindness that kind of pushed you to do that kindness. But truth, he hatova shemachazir ha'adam l'chaver shegom l'tova. Truth is when you repay a kindness to someone who gave you a kindness. Because that's emes, is the way it should be. Emes is the truth. The truth is the way things should be. Somebody's nice to you, you should be nice to them. That's emes. Chesed is beyond emes. I don't have to be nice. There's no reason I have to be nice to you. You're the enemy. You're trying to kill us. And we're helping you. So she's saying that's what a chesed is. So now she's saying like this. Ani asisi mochem chesed, I did a kindness to you. Omeris Rachav says, Klo yisi chayev esachem kum, I didn't owe you anything. Ubechalzos hitzalti es nafsho seichem. Mimoves besikun atzmi gadol. I didn't owe you anything, and still I saved your souls from death by what? By putting my life in danger. So that was my chesed. So I ask from you, v'nasata li os emes, give me a sign of truth. Now that's going to be coming up a little bit later on in the discussion. So he's saying like this, li, so an os emes, nasatem li, give to me, she's going to say, give to me an os emes, a true sign, meaning li la'atzmi, me for myself, tikmalu emes, repay a truth. What, which is b'hachzara satova, by doing a kindness back to me, which you owe me, so to speak. Shetatzilu gam osim emes, save me from death. So for me, it's an emes. Aval, but when she says vasisem im base of vi, but do with the house of my father, no, with the father, that's a chesed, that's a kindness. Kila base of via ain't a marazim chayam shum gul. They don't owe anything to her family. So that's why you'll see she uses this expression. She says, save me and my family. She started off by saying, to do to me, right? Ki asisi imochem chesed, I did a kindness to you. Do also with my family a chesed, right? But give me an os emes. I want emes and for my family chesed. So that explains the different terms over here. So he says, ma'anyein ma'od, it's very interesting. See how she's able to very quickly understand the qualities of the Jewish people, which are Balei HaChesed Emes. The fact she's using these terms of Chesed and Emes, gotta appreciate, she's from Canaanites. The whole curse of Canaan, or Canaan, why was Canaan cursed? Because he was what? He came from Cham. These are all Chamites. Right? There's a big difference, you know, in Noach's children, Shem and Ham. Shem was the good son. Shem was the quintessential giver. He understood that life is a life of chesed. That's the way you have to live. And Noach, and Shem, when Avraham met Malkitzedek, who was Shem, he said, how did you survive not getting destroyed in the flood? He says, because we were engaged in chesed whole year long with the animals. So the descendants of Shem, they were quintessential givers. The descendants of Ham are quintessential takers. When they were all prohibited from being intimate in the ark, so because you, how could you enjoy yourself while the world's being destroyed? Ham didn't care. He was intimate. He had a child. He had a child, Canaan, and therefore God punished Ham and made him black. Made him black, right? The difference between white and black. What's the difference between white and black? White, what does it do to light? It reflects light. What does black do? It absorbs light. Right? So Shem, who's the white Caucasian, he reflects. God gives, and he reflects it out. He gives to me, and he's kind to me, and I used to be kind to others. So the jargon of a Semite is kindness. That's their jargon. A Chamite has a different jargon. Their jargon is take, 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 take. So it's interesting that she who lives amongst the Canaanites and she is involved in a profession that is quite a take, take, take profession, right? Because that we know is the total opposite, so to speak, of chesed. But we'll see. We'll see later on how this fits in, though, how it'll fit in. But she was involved, immersed in the society of taking. So it's interesting how she already can use these terms of kindness and truth amongst a society that doesn't employ these kinds of terms. She was thinking, she thinks the Jews are like Hamites. They operate like Hamites. But she said, no, they must be much different. So Nira, back inside Nira comes out, Sha'adam ha'masik es ha'lokus, shal ha'shem yisparach v'shultona b'aretz. What can we base this change on? Well, the change now, if a person's able to achieve an understanding of godliness, and that Hashem rules the world, if you're able to understand that already, all right, there's already big concepts that have to come with that. It's a lot of baggage is with this God concept. Because once you really believe there's a God who really created the world the way you're supposed to understand, then you understand that the world could only have come into being through kindness. If you believe that the world came by accident, okay, then there's no kindness there. If you believe that there's all kinds of gods warring with each other, and you create God in your own image, so your gods are selfish just like you're selfish. But once you say that there's a God who's a perfect being, who had no need to create this world, and the only reason he created the world was to give man pleasure, so then the whole basis of this world is chesed. So the whole base of this world is chesed, then the only way I can achieve anything is through chesed. That becomes the next step. So you're seeing the beautiful evolution of Rachav from a theological point of view, how she's shifting around from being the Canaanite who is totally self-absorbed in her own pleasures. And now she comes to understanding that there is Hashem in this world, and therefore she's willing to risk her life for this. So therefore she already can start using terms of chesed and emes. He's saying, Mesugal b'kach gam lahasig, if you're able to understand that there's a God to such an extent that she understands, then she's very capable of understanding also, b'mida misyemes, into a certain way, as malas ha'avas, the great attributes of the patriarchs, which are, titein emes liyakov and chesed l'avram, as the pasuk says, give truth to Yaakov and kindness to Avram. Right, so it's like a total transformation. Like, would you expect a prostitute of 40 years to talk this way? Right, that's to really understand the character of this woman, how you can change that character once the hashkafa is put in the right place and you really understand it. Then you see mesiras nefesh and chesed and this, and now she can expect it and demand it, and rightfully so, from others as well. And it's maybe not even such a chutzpah. So let's continue. So Meraglim said, fine, it's okay, as long as you don't say anything. So let's go to the next paragraph. We're going to skip the three lines, the bold lines. It's just the pasuk being repeated. And we'll move now to five lines from the bottom. So they talk about this description. Tachteichem, under you. Nafshenu tachteichem, chem, shelochem. Of your very unusual expression, our soul is under the plural you, velo sagidu, and they shall not tell, and they shall not tell. Lashon rabim, it's a plural. So what are they saying? Allah alecha anachnu somchim. We're relying on you. Achareisha sisa imanu esachesed gadol. After you did this great kindness to us, we're relying on you. But avol gam beis avicha. But also the house of your father. That you have to bring them into our secret agreement to save them. So you have to be very careful. We oblige you to really be careful about total silence about this. If our little agreement gets out to everybody in the city, we can't be held responsible for their safety. There'll be certainly others, share used to turning the page, others who are not part of your family will have to be hidden over there. But we have a command, we got to destroy them all. And not let anybody live. Right? So that's explained the Pasha Pshat over there. That, our souls are under you guys. If you don't tell. So you gotta make sure that nobody's telling anything over here. So now he asks an interesting question over here. He said, it should have been bothering everybody here. Maybe it did, he's just not asking it. Kate said, What gave them the right and the authority to promise safety for Rachav and her family? Why weren't they obliged to fulfill the mitzvahs that they just said of destroying everybody, not letting anybody live? That's a command from God now. It's not Yeshua's own initiative. God has said you have to obliterate all the Canaanites. Finished. Okay, you know, you did us a big favor. We'll bend the laws. You know, that's a dangerous business to start bending God's laws here and there. The Jews suffered greatly in their history when we started to make exceptions to the rule. So what gives them the right to make these exceptions? So let's continue. So now he quotes a Yerushalmi, a very, very famous Yerushalmi, that you got to keep this in mind throughout the Sefer. Amar Rav Shmuel. Rav Shmuel says, Shalosh Prastinios. What's a Prastinio? So in the brackets he says, it's like messages given from a king, like those proclamations. You know, the squire comes into town, he pastes up the big proclamation. So like three proclamations that the Jewish people, that he says now, Shalach Yeshua L'Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua sent out a threefold proclamation to the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael. Actually, he comes to us before they came into the land. And this is what they said. You all inhabitants have three options. Number one, Mishuratza Lipanos, whoever wants to leave this country, Yipaneh, leave this country. We give you free access to leave, we won't run after you. And as we said, the Girgashis took him up on that. Beis Lahashlim, he who wants to make peace with us, Yashlim, let him make peace with us. Now, of course, that would mean they would have to change their ways. They'd have to become moral people. They would have to pay taxes to the Jews. But you could live. You could live, and we're not going to make problems for you. Gimel, Lasus Muhammad, he wants to make war. Yasa, then there will be war. So what do we see from this? So we see as we continue, Mitzvahs Hachramas Yoshvei Haaretz, this mitzvah of obliterating the people who live in the land, Eino Nahagis isn't only conducted and applies Ela Be'elish Al Yasvas Haaretz Mirtzonim, only to those who will not willingly leave the land, and also Oshel Yashlim Yishol, and they don't want to make peace with the Jews. That's the only ones you destroy. Well, Elish Yerushal Hashem, but those who want to make peace, V'kibu Matzvah Mas V'shibun, and accept upon themselves to be taxed and subjugated to the rulership of the Jewish people. Not that we make them into slaves. We'll not make them into slaves. You will live in the country, but it'll now be a Jewish state. Well, it's like how the Arabs live now in Israel. Right? They live so much better. You know, the Arabs in Israel live so much better now than they ever lived before, notwithstanding the lies of the PLO and the UN. Right? So it was to their advantage. Now, you're going to say an Arab who lives in Israel, they are tormented, they're subjected, they're tortured and they're abused. If you're an Arab, heck, you can build wherever you want without any permits. Only a Yid do they knock down your things. Right? You have more rights than a Yid has in Eretz Yisrael now, right? So you're going to say, and before that, you know, the Arabs who lived there, they were suffering, they couldn't make any money, other Arabs would kill them, it was lawless. So now you're coming into, the Jews take over, they make civil law, the Arabs can go to universities, they can make a parnas, they can do whatever they want, they don't even have to go to war. I mean, the Arab has it pretty good in Israel. Okay, but it takes a little mysterious nefesh from them, because you're going against the other 100 million Arabs who want to kill the Jews. I want to kill those Arabs for agreeing to that, right? But the truth is, they don't suffer; they benefit. You got to realize. So when we talk about this idea, the Jews saying, "Come in," you have to be willing to live under our authority. What's so bad to be under Jewish authority? It's under Torah law, which gives equality to God and to everyone and to human beings before the Almighty. It's a good thing to be under, right? In retrospect, you look back; those Arabs for the last 60 years. Their lives are so much better than any Arabs anywhere else in the Arab world. So that's what the Jews were saying. If you think about it that way, you know, everyone looks at Jews, these Bible critics say, look, the Jews are just as imperialistic and barbaric as anyone else. How are the Jews different than the Nazis? How are they different than the British? They did the same thing. They come in, they conquer. What's so special about the Jews? You just got to keep remembering. The world was pagan. The world was corrupt. The world was immoral. Right? And Eretz Yisrael is the focal point of the world. That is the spot between the three continents of the world. Everyone has to go through this. It is the hub of the world. And the hub of the world is immoral. It means the whole world's going to be immoral. So what they have to do, they have to make the hub of the world a moral place. Finished. It's not to empower and make the Jews wealthy. It's to make the world a moral place. So to make the world a moral place, so we're telling you immoral people, either just leave, and we're not going to kill you. We don't want to kill you. Just get out of here. So we can send a positive message to the whole world. Or, if you want, stay, just be moral people. Be moral people. You can go to universities, and you will do well, and you'll have this and that. I mean, of course you're going to pay taxes, because how are we able to run the country without taxes? But, you know, things will be fine with you. But if you don't want that, you want to bedavka, be corrupt in the most important place, then we have to kill you. We don't have a choice. This is unique in the annals of war. There's no such thing. Check any other country in the world, what they were coming for and what the Jews are coming for. So very good. So if you want to make peace, that's fine. So in those circumstances, back inside the text. So it comes out. So those who want to accept upon themselves to be subject to divine rule, and to keep the seven Noahide laws, but we don't say for them, you don't have to kill these kinds of people. They can be a ger toshav, a non-Jew resident of Eretz Yisrael. Because, again, and all the more so, Ishazos, this woman who's done more. Why? She kibla ol malchus shemayim, she's accepted the yoke of heaven upon her, meaning to say she wants to be a Jew. So for her, ein lomar aleh, we don't say about her the rationale that is quoted in Sefer Dvarim, why we have to kill all these people. Why do we have to kill all these people? The Torah says, l'man asher lo yelamdu eschem lasos k'chol tov asam asher osu l'lohehem. That you, why do we have to kill all the Canaan when we conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael? Because if we leave them around, we will learn from them to do all the abominations that they do with their gods. They did disgusting things. You know, they took little infants and killed them in honor of the gods and things. They're disgusting people. So we got to kill them out so we don't learn from them. But if they're willing to be civilized people, what's the problem? So Rachav, who has demonstrated, it's not just Stamazoi, she demonstrated her ability to do this, so therefore, they understand this is a person that deserves that, and she must have a family that's similar, and they're willing to save them as well. Yes, question?
All right, well that was that explained Rachav, but what about her mishpacha? So you're saying that because her mishpacha clearly created an environment where she would become this kind of person, that as well?
I'm sorry, if what?
Because the mishpacha created an environment that allowed her to become this kind
yeah.
of person.
Yeah, well, obviously they have something to do with this. And when they're going to see what happens as a great aspect of hashpa, a good influence is going to come over them. They're going to realize their daughter became Jewish. They're going to realize that she's going to be saved. Everyone else is going to be destroyed. So there is some merit for that family. Okay, when we continue tomorrow, we have to focus on the word va'ata. Why is she so focused on, they have to make the oath now? So remind me that's what we're going to continue tomorrow, and Mirza Shem will get through the rest of the parak over here, and at least get the essential push-up shot down, before we move into much deeper understanding.